Blog Talk Radio.
Monsters. I'm Ruthanna Marte Fio. Jack Jodell is with me, and we have Wayne Johnson with us again. Gwen is unavoidably out. We're going to miss her, huh, guys?
Yeah, we are. She's a good host. There's no doubt about it, but she picked an excellent substitute for today, so that's great. We'll look forward to talking with you today, Ruthanne.
Thank you, Jack.
She's just fine.
Yeah, we'll just, maybe she will hopefully be able to call in during the show. So we also want to say for listeners, give us a call, 213-816-0357. Tonight, we thought we'd talk a bit about Egypt because so much is happening there. This has been a week. I don't know, but what can you say about it? You know,
it's really been strong. I mean, the oppression that's been seen and the deaths and the violence, I mean, it's scary over there right now. And, you know, the United States for so long has sent such mixed signals through numbers of administrations to the Egyptian people. You know, for years we supported that horrible dictator Mubarak just because he was, pro-American and would keep the peace. And, he became too much for the Egyptian people to bear, and they finally got rid of him. So they had their election and elected Morsi, I forget his first name, Morsi was elected president. But he started turning the country too far, too fast, into a Islamic state in the views of many of the secular Egyptians, and they revolted against that and used the army to get him pushed out of office. And that's kind of where we sit today. There's protests going against him and back and forth for him with his own supporters, and it's turned bloody.
Very much like a religious right in this country. Extremism is their norm.
Yeah, so, good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've really become polarized, according to all the reports I've seen and heard. It's really, you know, every person for themselves, almost. It's gotten way out of line. And, you know, years ago, when they were ruled with an iron fist under President Nasser, that goes back quite a ways, and then to a lesser degree, but still equally as strong, under Sadat, who helped broker the peace agreement in 1978, you know, it was a much more stable country, and it turned away from the Soviets under Sadat, and came more to the liking of the West, you know, notably the United States, and it stayed that way for a long time. And we were very happy with that. Now, when Sadat was killed, you know, that was a momentary upset in the situation, but. You know, eventually Mubarak took control, and he ruled with an absolute iron fist for many decades, and he became so corrupt and so unpopular that they finally got rid of him.
Yeah.
Hey, let me interject here, if I may. When we were talking about Anwar Sadat, it was right after the peace agreement signing the treaty and recognizing Israel as the state. It was religious aspects, the religious right within Egypt, within
right.
his own army, that in a parade of military before the, you know, his, while he was standing there in view, jumped out of the trucks and opened up on him with automatic weapons and assassinated him.
Oh, I remember that. I was so shocked to see that.
And that's what we're dealing with again today is the religious extremism, the religious right in Egypt, and it, what we're dealing with is a secular versus religious. It's worse than a civil war. It's a religious war within that country.
Yeah, it's very bitter and very divisive. And you know what's funny? Not funny, it's not funny in the least, but what's sad and important to note is that this extremism, for a long time, the radical right, as I would call them in Egypt, or the religious right, was opposed to any government participation whatsoever. Eventually, though, they were persuaded to take part rather than war with the government, and so they formed their groups and their parties, and they eventually, once Mubarak was gone, they were able to elect their candidate as the number one candidate in the country. And it ended up boomeranging on them because they tried to go too far too fast, I believe. And in the process, they upset a lot of people, and that's where we are today.
That's a very good analogy. They went too far, too quick to make everything an extreme religious aspect. And that,
well, I think they underlying they wanted to impose Sharia law, which is never popular among cultures that haven't experienced it. And they started persecuting women to a certain extent, and that was, you know, not a good move either. But, you know, those were the things that led to the military and people getting in the streets to begin with, millions of them, protesting against the government. And it led to the forced abdication of Morsi.
Yes, exactly.
Well, I did read that there's some talk, and I guess that's just normal, that they're thinking about outlawing the Muslim Brotherhood again. But, you know.
I heard that, yeah.
Yeah, that's not going to do anything. I looked up, and it was started in 1928. Did you know that? Almost 100 years ago.
No,
and
I didn't know that. That's okay.
Yeah, so it's been around in some form.
This has been going on for hundreds and hundreds of years. Yes.
Right. But this was when it like organized. They said that it was actually pretty stable, and so it's been under different governments because of perceived plots, or maybe not just perceived, different things. It would be on the outs with the law, and so now they may try to disband it or make it illegal again. I don't know if that would do any, you know, I don't know. That might
you be know, more. I think it would push Egypt into a civil war is what I think, but I don't know. I'm not in Egypt, but I'm not sure, but they're definitely at the tipping point right now, and it's a very dangerous time over there, and for the United States to meddle in any degree whatsoever.
I think that the United States gives $1.3 billion a year to Egypt for military, or $1.5 billion,
right.
And
right.
$250 million for economic aid, and you know, I'd heard the some of our, I use the term leaders very loosely here. In this country, we're trying to talk to Obama to get him to, you know, cut that back. But so far, he hasn't. And I really don't know what good that would do. I mean, it seems like the United States has to keep Egypt on its good side because Egypt, so far, is playing along with Israel. And,
well, let me interject.
The United States happy.
I was going to say, allow me to interject here on that. During the peace agreements with Sadat, Menachem Begin, and Carter, that was a legal document that was signed, and part of the sweetening of the pie that we presented from our side, the United States, was if you support and recognize Israel, we can contribute to some of your economic stability, to give you enough of a military force to protect yourself and help fund that. And as long as Egypt recognizes and does not go back on that legal binding international agreement, we, the citizens of this country, are obligated to keep our part
keep
of
the
that
agreement.
Bargain.
And yeah, that's right.
If we did not, then all of a sudden there would be international lawyers suing this country for breach of that contract. When you heard the religious right on the radio talking about, Obama's giving all this money to the Islamo-fascist, Islamic Brotherhood and stuff. They are just inflaming things. It is a legal binding document that was signed back in the late 70s that obligates us to this.
Okay, right. So you're saying, Jack, that, I mean, Wayne, that there is no end date to that.
It's not a finite agreement. No, it's in force until it's repudiated somehow.
Yeah,
right. Well, until you can find some legal aspects to say, okay, they have negated in some way or other their side of that agreement. We are still all three parties are still legal and binding to that agreement. That peace accord was signed, and Carter won the Nobel Prize for it.
Right, right. And, you know, it's important to note, too, that Egypt hasn't blown this money on lavish parties for its guests and all that stuff. They've usually used this money fairly responsibly, unlike certain other countries we've lavished money on. But they've used it to help quell certain movements that have been popping up throughout the various areas in Africa. And they've exerted their own limited influence on the situation, and it's been ultimately beneficial for us and indirectly Israel as a result of that.
Very good, absolutely.
No, I agree that they haven't spent it like some countries are spending. That's the good part there.
Mubarak ended up taking a lot of money for himself and that sort of thing too, but that always happens. But the Egyptian military, by and large, has been very responsible users of that fundage.
And it's been the only stable thing within that country for many, many years.
So now, where does that? I mean, I believe before the show, because the numbers that Wayne had was more than I knew. Wayne, what numbers did you say were people were killed?
800 killed in the mobs when they just opened up on the demonstrators, taking refuge within, you know, a mosque for, you know, the sanctuary protection.
Right.
Thousands were injured. So, I mean, the infrastructure of the hospital medical system there has just been inundated and overrun and really is past the break of being able to efficiently and properly treat the wounded.
A nightmare. And I saw yesterday, I think it was yesterday, they raided a Muslim temple and flushed all the people out of it, and they didn't kill them all, but the secular people who were demonstrating in the street started beating on them. So it's a very ferocious scenario over in Cairo right now.
Yeah.
Yes, and well, as I've said before, earlier, as we were talking before the show went on, was the United States cannot, and I repeat, cannot get involved in this because this is a religious war, even more vicious than a civil war could ever be. And the bottom line is no matter what we do, it's a catch-22. If we got anything at all involved, all we're going to end up is the stinky end of the stick is the way I worded it.
Yeah, and very true. I think that's very, very sound advice for the American government to stay the hell out.
Exactly. If we learned any lessons from Vietnam or Afghanistan and Iraq, it's like we cannot get involved.
Yes. Do you think it will get to the point where, I don't really know the natural resources or the corporations of the U.S. that we're protecting there like we do in other countries. If we are, do you think it will get to the point where we may then send somebody in if corporations are threatened?
Go ahead, Jack, please.
Really the only real huge natural resource, I mean, they have, I think, a certain amount of oil, but not much. But they have the very well-traveled and very necessary Suez Canal that they administer, and the world cannot afford to have that shut down.
Right, that's a major shipping lane, a vital link from basically what I call the eastern aspect to the western world of that period. And that is, I mean, you can go land routes like the Marco Polo, but it was when the British created the Suez Canal to link that together for the ease of the shipping and stuff. If not, then they're going to have to go around the tip of Africa.
Right.
Yeah.
That would be a major hardship economically on Europe, which, by the way, has officially announced that they are now officially out of their recession due to the fact that Germany and France, both of them, have their job stimulus bills enacted early, and we're still fighting with right-wing key party in this one.
Well, we're behind the times in so many ways, especially nowadays with that far-right house we've got. They're just disgusting. But that's a whole other topic. But, you know, your point about
sorry for taking us down that little goat's path.
Well, your point about the Suez Canal being vital is very, very true because, if you recall, during World War II, that was one of his aims. He wanted to grab control of that lock, stock, and barrel. And thank God the British were able to stop him at El Alamein, and they thwarted that effort. Otherwise, he would have had access to all the oil of the and in conjunction with the invasion of Russia, the Southern Caucasus and all that, he would have had all that oil under his realm. And it would have been way tougher for anybody to have ever thought of defeating him.
Now, that would have
been good point, Jack.
All right. So, I know we have different troops in the area there. Do you think that this seems like it's more Wayne was saying, a religious war, I mean, in the country. It's not like they're going to... somebody's going to go and try to grab the canal or fight in that particular area.
Right, exactly.
Well, when I say religious war, we cannot also just limit it to the artificial boundaries of Egypt because the Sunnis and the Shiites are two separate sects of the Muslim religion, and they have been battling themselves since 600 A.D., and matter of fact, now, you know, that Iraq is governing itself, there is Shiite bombing Sunni and Sunni bombing Shiite aspects. There is, again, a religious implosion in Iraq.
Yeah. Really, the Iraq war, you know, it opened up a lot of sores all throughout the Muslim world, and it created a lot of conflicts.
I've heard people who say that a lot of this is, in some areas, it's not the Shiite against the Sunni nearly as much as Western media would have us believe. And I'm just saying in some areas.
You have a much bigger picture, better picture on this. Elaborate on that for me, please.
I'm trying to think what the last was that I heard where they said, you know, that there again, if people would leave them alone, people being Westerners, they've gotten along with a whole Hatfield-McCoy thing occasionally, but not anything like we are led to believe, that they're not constantly at each other's throats. And I do believe that. I think that our media makes it appear much worse and tries to instigate it, actually.
At times there are flare-ups, though. I mean, first of all,
yeah.
Saddam Hussein was a Sunni, and he instituted Sunni rule over what had been previously mainly a Shiite nation. He immediately declared war on the Shiite neighbor Iran, and it didn't work too good. He kind of bled himself dry.
And then forget the Wahhabis, because to me they are the dangerous ones. And they came out of Saudi Arabia and they're in Afghanistan, and they are really, in my opinion, the fanatics. Mm-hmm. Not that the others have fanatics, but Wahhabis just seem way, way over there to the right so far that you couldn't go any further that way.
Yeah, they're pretty wacko, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
At least by our standard.
I think so. You know, and then you have different groups like Boko Haram in Nigeria, and who are, you know, their main thing is they're against Western education and Westerners, and they fight their own people in the country.
Oh yeah.
So we've got a lot of that, but.
Oh yes.
But Egypt, I mean, it like you said, under those dictators, it was pretty stable for a long time. I mean,
was. As a matter of fact, if you recall, I don't know if you recall this or not, but in the very early 60s, or late 50s, the early 60s, Egypt and Syria banded together as one nation. I forget what their name was, United Arab something or other. But it didn't end up working out. It proved too logistically fragile a coupling, so they broke apart into individual states again, but they were very close to one another for quite some time, and that was a very stable period, and
attack Israel from two fronts on the Syrian war. In fact, is this going through, in essence, a religious civil war?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want to get rid of their dictator, but it's also, you know, the Shiites of Iran are funneling weapons into Syria to fight the Shiite aspect, which is, of course, has a large segment on the western side of Iraq. It's more regional. Boundaries are all artificial.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
those boundaries were created, oddly enough, by the British, and had absolutely nothing to do with the realities of the populations involved.
Exactly.
And deliberately set certain boundaries that made absolutely no sense, and we're still paying for that decision to this day.
Well, they've done that with Pakistan and India. I mean, like Kashmir.
Good point.
Yeah, it's terrible. But now, right now, with everything that's going on in Syria, with KSA and the United States giving weapons, trying to overthrow Assad, what is Egypt doing? Are they involved very much in Syria?
Well, I think they're pretty involved in their own situation now.
I asked because you said they were so close at one point.
But not today. I mean, that was then, and this is now. And now Egypt's preoccupied with its own survival, going to emerge as the victor in their political struggle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Maybe one of our listeners shed some insight on that.
Yeah.
We would love to have people call in 213-816-0610. 213-816-0357. That's 213-816-0357. So tell me, what do you think? You gentlemen know what's going on there. What do you think? Is this going to calm down anytime soon? Are we going to, see somebody rise out of the military that everyone can, if not like, at least put up with?
Well, I think that's a good analogy. Go ahead, Jack.
If somebody does arise out of the military and become a strong man, it will serve our purposes. Although I forget his name now. I just saw his face on TV this morning. I forget his name, but he's no friend of the United States. This the current guy that's kind of the strong man in Egypt, and it's really hard to say. It's so volatile right now. It could go either of a number of different ways, and that's why it bears a lot of intense, close watching and waiting.
I was going to say, I doubt you'll find a man that has the viewpoints of the separation of church and state as we have in here. So, in other words, if someone was of the secular aspect and said, look, we have to try to get along. We do have differences, but we can live with those differences. I think the religious right would not be palatable to them at all, because they do want a theocracy. That group does want a theocracy-type government and the other. So, I mean, it's very much like, the secular aspects here, those of us who believe in the civil liberties of the separation of church and state, and those who
and the fundamentalists.
Extreme religious in this country. We are so polarized, at least we honor the voting booth outcome.
Yeah, well, so far at least.
Can the military rule without a definite leader, at least? I mean, would there be some leader that nobody knows about?
They've done that in the past. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. They've done that in the past. And they installed Nasser as president, if I recall right, in the early 1950s, or mid-1950s. And, they are certainly capable of that. And, we just don't know what branch of the military will gain the upper hand or what spokesman will emerge. We really don't know at this point. We'll just have to wait and see, I guess.
Well, now, the man that you saw on TV today, whose name you didn't recall, who you said is not a friend of the U.S., if he were to really get in a position of power, he's not a friend of the U.S., so does that mean that he would not pretty much kiss ass as far as Israel goes? Or how is he not a friend of the U.S.?
Well, we don't know. And he's not a friend of the U.S. He doesn't want a domination by the U.S. And he'll thumb his nose at us. But I don't think he'll go so far as to declare war on Israel. But you never know these things, And I don't know if he'll reach out to Russia or China, or if they'll even dare to get involved here. it's so volatile.
Without declaring war on Israel, he could actually open up and make it easier on the people in the concentration camp called the Gaza Strip. I mean, there's a lot of things to do without formally declaring war on Israel.
Exactly.
And any of those things would be taken, I assume, by the U.S. to be something terrible. So,
and I'll interject here. Of course, like I said, we have the economic obligation for their economic stimulus that we help to contribute to. And, of course, also with the military. But should Russia, just like where we're on opposite sides again, almost like the Cold War in Syria, should Russia just, snuggle up a little bit and say, look, you don't need their money. They're on a downhill decaying aspect. We'll go ahead and supplement what they're giving to you plus. And, we can address this Israeli thing later. So, thumbing the nose and sending the United States off, breaking that agreement.
Oh, Putin would love that.
Then and say, we will fill that void.
Yeah, Putin would love that. I don't know that the Russian economy can support that today, because they're kind of fragile in a lot of ways. And I don't know. Putin is he's like a sly cat. You don't know what he's going to do next. And he thumbed his nose at Obama already by taking Snowden in, which I thought was a good move.
I thought it was great. But, I mean, I'm all for it. Yeah.
Yeah. But and I know he's desperately wants to restore the Soviet, or not the old Soviet Union, but Russia, the Russian Federation, to its leadership status among nations. And he's got a long ways to go to do that because he, you know, following the collapse of their Soviet Empire, they, you know, frittered away into nothing almost, you know, economically and everything else. But he'd love to restore their former prestige.
Yeah, they never absorbed the Black Poland like they once had. And of course, they have their own issues with. Where all the oil is. Help me out here. I'm drawing.
Oh, yes.
So anyway,
in the Caucasus and in
the
Muslim republics that they once controlled outright, but are now associated states, Kazakhstan and all that stuff.
Right, exactly. And I mean, if we remember back a few years, they went over and took control of a movie theater, demanding releasing of Muslim prisoners and things like that, and ended up blowing the place up.
Mm-hmm. Was that in Chechnya?
They have their own issues with the Muslims, too.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah. And there have been reprisals aimed at the Muslims in Chechnya, I believe, and that's caused some conflict there. So they've got their own house to sort out, and they're still in the process of doing that. But they would love to be restored to their former degree of power and prestige throughout the world.
Well, I can't blame them. I mean, just, you know, off the top. I mean, maybe we wouldn't want that, but I don't blame them. I mean, people want, you know, the glory of the past kind of thing.
It looks tonight, right now, as though Germany has emerged the real leader of Europe, and they're stable right now. And that's a good thing. They've managed to correct their economy to the point where they can still provide a great amount of social welfare and keep people happy and well taken care of, and have provided a certain amount of prosperity as well. And at the same time, they've strengthened their industries and their presence on the world, the global market, in such a way that, you know, we should really emulate them rather than view them as Europeans, you know.
Right. Well, they're doing good things. I mean, as far as their use of solar power, and you know, the healthier, they're not big on Monsanto kind of thing. You know, they're actually. I agree. Germany is coming up looking good.
Unlike the United States, where we took all of our manufacturing industry and send it over to communist China, and then set up there the whole infrastructure over there, Walmart being a good example, and then anybody else who was manufacturing anything in this country. Germany was not part of that, so they kept their industry and their manufacturing within their own country. And so when the shipping costs were now inhibitive to make it cost conducive to manufacture in China and then ship the product back to your parent country. That Germany is doing much better now, and we have to, i.e., rebuild our own manufacturing infrastructure within this country again.
We certainly do. Not only our manufacturing infrastructure, but our electronic grids and everything, our roads, everything's decaying.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm involved with, is the electronic grid. Electrical grid. That part is happening in this country.
Thank God. That's good. That's very vital.
We do have some comments. I wanted to read you from the chat room. John says the holy wars are beyond his scope of knowledge, and I'm pretty much there too. I don't know much about that. Krell says that Germany is in a strong position if they keep their nationalism in check. So
yes, good point. Very good point. Because that's gotten them into trouble for hundreds of years.
Yes. Yes. That whole Aryan, nation, Aryan is better, blah, 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 on and on, yeah.
All that crazy stuff. And, you know, that's what made the Soviets so they wanted buffer zones all around Germany. They didn't want to have to deal with them again ever because Germany had attacked them numerous times.
Yes, you're right. Well, I think that the memory is still fresh enough with the extremism of their of the last 50 plus years, 50, 60, 80 years. That if and when, and of course, you're always going to have that segment. I mean, we have the John Birch Society, we have the Klan here.
Oh, sure,
but
sure.
But we're by no means going to be taking over our country. And I mean, yes, they now you know operating under the banner of Tea Party, but
yeah, fascist group, you know.
Yeah. But this is a total aside. But you were talking about manufacturing and keeping it in your own country, and how we need to do some of that instead of sending all of ours over to like Southeast Asia and places.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I just read, and you may have seen this, this headline today, that in Honduras, which is, you know, right in our own hemisphere.
Their back door, yeah.
I've been there. That there's some factory, they're making harnesses for the U.S. And mm-hmm. to expedite the work, they have been making their workers wear diapers so that...
Oh,
time off to go to the bathroom. You know, people need to think of what we're doing with labor in other countries. I think that is appalling.
Oh, yeah. We look the other way deliberately. As long as it gets there on time and cheap, we don't care what happens.
Right.
And we do the same throughout all Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
Those people work for nothing, and they get exploited.
Right. We have those people jumping out of the windows, and then they put nets. So
that's
they
the Fox situation,
You know, that. And what about the fires in Bangladesh? People are locked in the factories. They can't get out. They burn up.
Right. And it's terrible.
Garment manufacturers for U.S.
Yeah.
We
outlawed that kind of behavior in this country at the turn of the last century, but we will put up with it. We'll even encourage it. We'll look the other way gladly in other countries. It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's such a double standard.
The Vietnam War was barely over, we barely pulled our troops out when Nike moved in and incorporated the child labor to make the Nike's tennis shoes.
Sure,
Yeah.
Well, you know, you'll never stop corporations from trying to make a buck. You know, even during World War II, in the darkest days of World War II, when we were fighting Nazi Germany, Coca-Cola started making orange drink there. But they imported it here under the name of Fanta so that it wouldn't be traceable directly to Coca-Cola. And that's the origin of Fanta orange drink, folks, for those of you who buy it. It was created so that the Coca-Cola company could trade illegally with Nazi Germany while we were at war with them. How about that?
There's so much more of that. This is a real point that Krell made in the chat. I don't know if you're in there. He said that Germany's got a different mindset about products and staples. They place a lot of value on durability and engineered quality.
Yes, they do.
They'd rather have a simple, durable than lots of cheap plastic. And I think that's something we can emulate with.
We certainly could, and I applaud them for that common sense approach to manufacturing. They've always had it. You know, they're a remarkable people, really, in spite of all the obstacles and all the problems they've caused over the years. Do you realize East Germany was completely devastated after World War II, and the Russians took lock, stock, and barrel control of that country, completely dismantled entire factories, and sent them back to the Soviet Union, and the East Germans were left with nothing. But within 15 years, they had the top economy in the Eastern Bloc, even better than Russia's. That's amazing. It's
great.
A testament to the great work ethic and the great intelligence of the German people per se.
Yeah,
they were very
very industrious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Carl's saying, I get so mad at people giving Apple so much American credit when they're the worst. Tax evasion, slave labor, every worst characteristic, but they're idolized.
Oh, they're terrible. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, Krell. That's very true.
Yeah.
Very, very true.
And John says, you know, the jobs they're looked at as an engineering, free-spirited genius, that job's the man, Steve. But you know, how Apple makes that money, because it was Apple plants people were jumping out of, or I mean plants that were making parts for Apple.
Yes. The name of the company was Fox, F-O-X-X. They were the subcontractors that were making, well, matter of fact, they make just a lot of everybody's cell phones, but particularly the iPad, iPod, all the Apple products.
Yeah.
They were working 12 hours on, 12 hours off. You didn't leave the tree when you weren't working. You were sleeping in a cot or a rack. And then when it was your turn to go to work, the person who was just getting off would climb into your same rack, and he would be sleeping. He was working his 12 hours. So they call it a warm scenario.
It's modern-day slavery.
It is slavery.
It is.
Predatory capitalism at its best.
Yes, yeah. Good way to put it. Very true and very accurate.
Well, and because it, I think I'm always like harping on this, but it seems like it's because we have in this country such a dumbed down populace, watching TV, believing the commercials. They think that they've got to have this, they've got to have that, and I think our country in many ways is so spiritually bankrupt. I mean, people believe that.
Very true.
Will make them happy. It will fill that void.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as they're figuring that, I just don't know what to do.
Well,
you know, like,
they want to accept that stuff. We've been born and bred in an entire universe of pure entertainment. Everything has to be entertaining, or we don't look at it anymore, or we lose interest. You know, we've got to grow up and face the world as it really is. The world is not solid entertainment 100% of the time. There's a lot of tragedy. There's a lot of mistakes. There's a lot of hardship. And we've got to acknowledge that, and we've got to be able to deal with that, or we're going to fail as a people.
Well, there's so much
growth possible. I'm just going to interject here. Was John Adams wrote a book called The Wealth of Nations back in the 1740 in that time frame, where basically said the nations that have the wealth are those that do the value-added manufacturing. Those that supply the raw materials become the third world subservient nations and invest, transfer their wealth from their raw materials and the potential that they have being shipped to the country that's doing the value-added, then they turn around and sell the value-added products right back to the country that the raw materials originated in. This country has been heading down that path for too long, decades.
Yeah.
Yes, very good point.
Like
Japan was manufacturing, we were buying the products. Then it went to China. You know, we're shipping them raw and getting back finished products in other aspects. And once you teach a country how to manufacture your product, in essence, you have taught them how to design it and improve upon that design.
Right.
So you end up losing your technological edge to the country that has the infrastructure that can keep producing it.
Very good point.
Well, we have something like 5% of the population in the world, the U.S., and yet we're using up 35% to 40% of the natural resources from around the world. And there's something really wrong with that.
I agree.
Yeah.
Well, we place no limits on ourselves. We've become accustomed to this idea that it's an ever-expanding frontier. I'm sorry, those days ended 50, 60, 80 years ago. They ended a long time ago. We've got to come to grips with that.
I would add this, Jack, is you can look at the Roman Empire, where they were go out and conquer and then send all the wealth and resources back to Rome. And it wasn't until basically you keep growing like that, and it's a natural sine wave or a natural evolution of things. It's when you extend your armies so far, and the resources, benefits that you're getting from that extension of your influence can no longer support the army. Henceforth, the army has to be pulling back. That's what happened when they were in England and had to pull back, and basically until it just finally all collapsed right back in on itself. And this is where you saw the rise of the Goths, the Franks, the Brits, you know, they never did conquer the Picts, which are the Scots.
Mm-hmm.
And so henceforth, they lost their international influence because they extended themselves too far and the return on investment no longer there. It's
well, they
economic.
Got stretched out during World War II, and it basically bankrupted the country, and we had to swoop in and support them. We basically did, and it was necessary, and it had to happen. But in the process, they ended up divesting themselves of all their old colonies, which were a big source of wealth for them, and it just compounded the problem for them.
And, you know, the United States, I say, is right into that same aspect. It was all right while we had the influence and the research was coming in, but all this invasion into Iraq, I'm very sure that the Halliburton was looking very much at the aspect of gaining all those oil reserves from Saddam Hussein, but it didn't pay. Then we went into Afghanistan. Yes, that's where, you know, a small pocket of religious extremists was able to put together and fly planes into the trade towers, but it was not the whole country.
Right.
And well, there's a lot of, you know, that could be debated, too. We won't do that on this show. But it's true, there's a pocket of religionists there. But as far as, we're not there because of that. We're there because of the natural resources. And and we're guarding the opium field. So, hey, the poppy field. So, you know, we're getting something out of that. Krell said that Madison Avenue, in a sense, created us because of their expertise in propaganda and things like that.
Yeah. Very true.
So I think, that's sad. So he's saying that, you know, we can't place the blame completely on consumers like I try to do. No, he's true. We're the junkies without control. And
We're fed this stuff, and we're led to believe that that's the way things should be, and that's the way things will always be. But that is so delusionary. It's just unbelievable, you know. It's just delusional, and we cannot continue to go down, beat that same drum and go down that same path.
Yeah. But then, so then the economy collapses if people stop buying all this crap they don't need. You know, so we need to have something in place.
Well, we need to shift our priorities into things that really matter and the things that will benefit the widest number of people at the time. And, you know, trinkets from China are not it. I'm sorry, but we've got to get over that bad habit.
Yeah, I like that term, trinkets from China. That's very good.
That's the one, you know, and cheap electronics from China. No, it's all it does, you know, it enriches the very, very wealthy at the expense of the whole rest of the world.
Yeah.
You know, I've got another fact here. Since 1985 to 2005, in that 20-year period, all the income, 80% of all the new income that came into this country went to the top percent.
Yeah.
Draw a
that's
visualization
disgusting.
Here. You have 100 people, and they bought a single pizza that had 100 slices. Well, the first person to open the box grabbed 80 slices. And if anybody said, wait a minute, you know, couldn't you just been happy with 79? Then it's the way you're called the socialist.
Yeah.
You know? So,
well, our wealthiest upper echelon has gotten very greedy and very pampered. And basically, they've done it on the backs of everybody below them. And you know what? That's got to end. We got a little taste of people's opposition to that with the 1% versus 99% debate. And I thought that was very healthy. It kind of ran its course, but there's still the undercurrents are still there, and people still are aware of the problem, and they just don't know what to do about it. And eventually, when they find that answer, we're going to see some good, solid results, and I'm convinced of that, and I can't wait for it to happen.
Yeah, I think a lot of good came out of it. Some people are actually running for office now that got their empowerment out of the Occupy movement, and other people, like you said, have become more aware. So I think that it was a grand thing for us.
I do, too. I really do. I don't think it was a failure in the least.
No.
I think it didn't achieve everything we hoped it would immediately, but it did lay the groundwork for some very good achievements down the line.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this scenario did not happen overnight. So the turnaround and the reclaiming back of what had been the rights of the middle class will
mm-hmm.
return. And that's what I'm
ready. I'm up for a new system, but that's me.
I am too. I blogged about that not too long ago. There's a system out there called distributism that has never been adopted here, and people have viewed it as idealistic, and they've just dismissed it rather than trying to come to a way to practically implement it. And basically its premise is that instead of one or two big, huge owners that control everything, split it up and let's have as many people as possible have some ownership. And it's been implemented in small amounts throughout the world in different areas, and it's worked very, very well for them. And I know it could work very well for us as well. Oddly enough, this was a system that was devised in the late 19th century, and oddly enough, the Catholic Church played a heavy role in formulating some of the dogma for this. So they weren't always on the side of the rich people and oppression and all that stuff. But they had a very strong sense of needing to take care of the poor, and that was one of the things, in conjunction with some other great philosophers who were of like mind, came up with this notion of distributism.
Well, and that's sort of along the line of, you know, worker-owned plants and
cooperatives. Exactly, yeah.
Cooperatives. Like, I always go back to Mondragon in Spain because I'm totally enamored of that.
You know what? That's a perfect example.
It is just like, yeah, we will do a show on that sometime because it is
that
just
sounds awesome.
Wonderful, wonderful example of what we can do.
We should do.
Oh, we should, definitely. And it's pretty much a must if we're going to survive with any kind of, what do I want to say?
Freedom.
Freedom. Anything.
You know, justice.
Like that.
You name it. All the good words, yep.
So before we wind up, let me take that then back to Egypt. Have either of you heard anything about, I mean, I know this has been the big week and people are just going around killing each other, but what about their workforce? And are people going to work? Are they still
doing
that?
Well, those who have jobs are, but there are many unemployed Egyptians,
right.
And that's part of their disaffection with the way things are because they right. cannot find work. And the work that they can find is like what's becoming here more evident, is a lot of crappy part-time junky jobs that nobody wants and doesn't pay anything. And a lot of people are just unemployed, period. A lot of student unemployment and teenage unemployment. It's much worse than it is here, and it's bad enough here. But, yeah, they've got a lot of things to straighten out in their economic model. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, it was hoped that this revolution would help to solve some of that, but in so far it's just put it all into limbo.
Jack, let me help me out here. Am I thinking of the correct number that the unemployment rate for those that are 35 and under is as high as 40%?
I think you're within a few points of it, definitely, if you're not right on it, because it's unbelievably high.
Well, remember, that was what got Arab Spring going in Tunisia, the university graduate who couldn't get a job and was getting fruit from a cart. And he was fined, and so he self-employed and that started it. 40% sounds about, sadly, right.
Very sadly, very true. Yeah, and, you know, this is so unnecessary. It is just so ridiculous that we have this in this modern world, even though that's an ancient world, really, that we're talking about there, but they've never quite modernized the way we have. But, you know, it is so unnecessary. Look at the amount of billionaires who don't even pay a single dime of taxes in this country alone and shelter it in big banks overseas to keep it hidden out of everybody's grasp. and it's so needless. All it is mind games they're playing, and, yes. and it's for their own egos that they're trying to prop up. That is so childish, and you know, it is so devastating to the rest of the world. We cannot afford this kind of behavior any longer.
Well, the French have ended the guillotine to take care of that, and I something else.
Yeah, my goodness, yeah.
Okay,
well,
so now Wayne is thinking about...
We hope it doesn't turn violent.
No, I, well, I agree, and that's, I don't profess violence either.
Right.
But,
yeah. but you know, there is cause and there is effect, and I think that's what you were illustrating.
Exactly, yeah. exactly, yes, by mm-hmm. all means, yes.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, before we leave, how can people find either of you, both of you? Jack,
ahead,
you blog. Where do you blog?
Oh, I'm at the Saturday Afternoon Post. It's all capital letters. If you Google that, you will see that it'll lead you right there. And also, once in a while, I contribute to Roundtree 7. I haven't done that in a while. I've got to get back in that habit, but I've just been kind of out of it lately. But that's where I'm at. And Wayne,
okay.
tell them about your site. Your site.
Well, I'm Engineer of Knowledge. And, again, mine is in the political, socioeconomic aspects. I also would like to recommend another website that I comment on quite often is... The Progressive Professor, and he's located in Florida, too. He's a very he's a professor at a university there in Florida who teaches political science and history. And very, mm-hmm. very intelligent. I highly recommend go visiting that site, too. He's very good. And then I also contribute to another blog called Man with a Muckrake, M-U-C-K-R-A-K-E, Muckrake. Good group there too.
Yeah, very good. I've visited that blog a lot. I'll have to look at the other one too. That's great. I just want to mention in passing before we leave, I talked a little bit about distributism today. There's actual publication online called the Distributism Review, and it's worth looking at. It'll give you some ideas and some good food for thought.
Okay.
Well, I assure you, I'll check it out.
Yeah, and okay, the Distributism Review. And Wayne, what was the first one that you mentioned? Something of Knowledge.
Engineer. I work in both mechanical and engineering disciplines, and so henceforth, matter of fact, the name really came from the teachings of Don Juan of Carlos, who the author was Carlos Casandilla, who got a Charmin training with a Yaqui or a man of knowledge. Henceforth, the name of my blog, Engineer of Knowledge.
Okay. All right, good, because it's good to know where we can find you both. So you've given us places and places to look up. So I want to thank you both. And as we sign out, words of wisdom from you both.
Keep looking forward. Keep pressing forward is all I can say. I say that every week. And thank you, Ruthann, for co-hosting for Gwen today. We appreciate that and look forward to speaking with you again down the line.
Fun. It really was. And
keep the progressive viewpoint because progress, that's the reason why they call it progress, is the progressive viewpoint does and will win out in the long run.
I agree.
So we have to stay strong, right?
That's right.
Keep the faith.
Thank you both so much. This has really been fun, and I think we got some information out there. And next week, Gwen will be back, and we've missed her. We'll tell her, and we'll see her then. Okay? Good night, everybody.
Well, thank you, Ruthann. You did a great job today. We're glad that you were there, able to sub for her. And we'll look forward to her return next week, and we hope you'll continue to call in on occasion and comment.
I'll do that.
Okay. Great. Look forward to it.
Have a good, rest of the weekend, the next few hours anyway. Have a good week.
That's right. And you too, definitely. And everybody out there, thanks for listening. We appreciate your input and the fact that you do tune in and do keep abreast of what's happening in the world.
That's it. Good night.
Good night, everybody.